What's up, everybody, and welcome to the Financially Free Friday episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I'm here with Sim today, my fave. Welcome back, Sim.
I'm back, guys.
And we are going to be chatting about a little to-do, a little checklist for you to help get started on financial planning for aging parents. This is a topic that's coming up more and more lately because we are a firm that works with a lot of millennials, Gen X as well, and we have the boomer generation going through retirement and the aging process right now. So I've got some interesting facts and details, but welcome to the show again, Sim. I'm really excited to chat about this with you.
It's been a while since I've been here, guys. We're going to talk about some things. I know this can feel like a heavy topic, but you know, it's one of those things, just get it done. You put nice, easy checklists together. So hopefully it's just one of those things, you do it and you don't have to think about for a while.
Yeah. And I think it's something that a lot of times people don't even know where to start, and they don't even know if it's their place to start the conversation. So we'll talk a bit about that today. But some interesting facts. I thought we could start with just how big of a situation this is and how maybe important it should be or could be to you thinking about your own parents. And also, like, you can relate it to your own financial planning long term for like your future kids, like things that they would be thinking about when it comes to protecting and caring for you in the future. Baby boomers, they're roughly born between 1946 and 1964. They're a very large generation because actually they make up about 25% of the population. I think my mouth dropped when I read that earlier.
Yeah, we were kind of talking, it's a little bit like an inverted pyramid. Like if you look at all the generations that exist, they're the largest one to date. And they kind of say that each generation gets smaller and smaller. And Gen Z, which technically is not even the current generation, it's actually Gen Alpha now, my children. But Gen Z, they're saying that they're not even really dating, the dating pool.
Yeah.
Like people become more like homebodies, which I guess makes sense with the pandemic. But yeah, inverted pyramid.
Yep. And their size has really significant economic effects, especially when it comes to wealth transfer and healthcare costs. So when it comes to wealth transfer, like you may have heard or read articles about the great wealth transfer. This is a topic that is not really a secret that folks have been kind of anticipating economically for a while, but boomers hold an estimated $84 trillion in assets, $84 trillion with a T. And much of that could potentially pass to Gen X, which would be possibly your parents, or boomers might be your parents, depending on how old your parents are. My mom, I realized looking at this information today, is a very old Gen X.
Yeah, we were kind of saying old Gen X or really young boomer.
Very young boomer. Yeah, however you want to look at it. But much of this wealth could pass to Gen X, potentially millennials as well, over the next 20 to 30 years. This will be the largest wealth transfer in history, influencing estate planning, taxes, real estate, and financial services as a whole. And many boomers are also living longer, right? Which means wealth transfer may happen later or potentially be consumed by long-term care and medical expenses, which can really get costly later on at the end of our lives. So this could potentially cause some healthcare costs strains. And boomers are aging into higher cost healthcare years in general, increasing the demand for Medicare, long-term care, and elder care services. Sim, do you have a 55 and up community around you?
I bet I do. I feel like where I live is a little bit more mixed, but I think every city has this, like the pockets where like people who are aging like to kind of be near each other. Actually, there's some studies on this too, that is a great way to promote longevity when you're older, is to be in community because, you know, you're looking out for each other, you're less lonely. So yeah, you definitely have those pockets.
I think that's absolutely right. My grandma moved into a 55 and up community. I think my second grandmother, my dad's mom, is interested in doing the same at some point too. She's looking to downsize. And a community was the common theme there, like wanting to be part of something. And my grandma, who does live in one now, she goes to bunco night. She goes to any of the little fun get-togethers, like in the neighborhood that they do. They've got a pool, they've got a jacuzzi, they have tennis courts. So like it does keep her more active. And that's what she wanted as she was aging. And those, I think, are popping up, I feel like, everywhere in my community. There's a 55 and up community in our neighborhood as a whole. A brand new pod of our neighborhood opened up, and it's a big 55 and up community. And that's one of probably five I can think of within a 5 mile radius of where I live. So this is probably also in your area for kind of an interesting real estate topic. But back to aging, getting into some higher healthcare years, healthcare cost years. The healthcare system in general is already feeling pressure due to rising chronic disease rates like diabetes, heart disease, dementia, and government programs like Medicare and Social Security, as we know, are under some strain, which could potentially lead to higher taxes, policy changes, and maybe benefit reductions, as scary as that might sound. And so for professionals, especially physicians, dentists, financial advisors, like these shifts can create a lot of challenges, but also opportunities to make good decisions and to make some proactive decisions on some of the things that could be worrisome later on. We've got a checklist put together for how to start these conversations with your parents or with your loved ones on starting to proactively prepare.
Yeah, so let's get into the checklist. This is a 7-step checklist. So part one is obvious as it may sound, is start the conversation. And I know that for a lot of people, it can feel awkward to have a conversation with your parents about aging and about money, especially in some cultures. And I've experienced this too as a first-generation American. It's not seen as polite to talk about some of these things. It's not polite to talk about money. And in a lot of these cultures, there's also like a societal expectation that you're going to provide a certain standard of care for your parents. But you know what happens when you make assumptions. So it can be a really great first step just to have that conversation. It's not really going to be just one conversation. You may need to have multiple. It may be you and your parents, you, your parents, and siblings. A third party could involve an attorney, a financial planner, but get some information. See if they can open up to you about their financial situation. What does it look like? What resources do they have for retirement? This kind of overlaps a little bit with step two, but again, with step one, starting the conversation, there might be a lot of info that you start to get. Whatever information you get, try to enter the conversation with a lot of empathy if you can, especially if your parents maybe don't have as many resources ready for, their end of life care, their, golden years. Try to have some empathy. There could be any number of reasons. So have a little bit of understanding if you can, because no one really likes to be approached with a sense of judgment. That's not going to really foster them opening up to you. Questions you can ask them: do they have savings? Do they have retirement funds? Do they have a will, power of attorney, healthcare directive, right? Those estate planning documents, we call them like the basic documents. Do they have those? And who do they put in those documents? Is it you? Is it a sibling? Do you guys share responsibility? Do you even want that responsibility? And then also try to get their preferences too. What are their preferences for long-term care? Obviously, we have really great medical advances now. People are living longer, people are healthier, but there also may be, a need for care. We hope that your parents don't need that, but if they do, you want to kind of know what are their preferences so that way they can have a sense of dignity and autonomy in a situation where maybe when these things happen, they're not of sound mind and they may not be able to state their opinion later.
Yeah, I think this conversation reminds me a lot of like the first conversation we'll have with financial planning clients about their goals, their dreams, what they wish for, and what they're working towards. So this is a very similar conversation with your parents. Like, what are their goals for their longer term needs, their retirement? Do they want to stay in their current home? Do they want to consider downsizing? Do they prefer to live with you or live with a family member, right? It would be nice to know that if that's what your parents have the expectation or the assumption is going to happen.
Now,
So.
just because they have a preference doesn't mean, oh, hey, I prefer to live with you. It doesn't mean that's going to happen, but you want to know that before they show up. I don't know if you guys have seen like the Golden Girls, Sophia, her nursing home burns down, Shady Pines, and then she, shows up at her daughter's house. And we all know the story. Do you want to be in a Golden Girl situation?
Right. So having these conversations can be really helpful. So that's step one. Start the conversation, have open-ended questions, be ready for open-ended answers. I think this is a really good stepping stone. And this is probably not going to be the first conversation, like you said, Sim. It's going to be an ongoing conversation, which is okay. And this is why you probably want to start this earlier than you think you need to. Step two would be gathering important financial and legal documents. So we want to identify, and this is something that you would do in conjunction with your parents if they're okay with having you part of this process and involved in this process with them or with them and their financial planner, them and their CPA, start putting yourself into these conversations, these meetings, if they're interested in having you involved. But we want to identify all income sources. Like, where is their money going to come from in retirement, or where is it coming from right now? Is it coming from Social Security, pensions, retirement accounts? What types of retirement accounts? Do they have annuities? Do they have just brokerage accounts that they're drawing money from? That's good information to have. List all the assets that are under this portfolio. So, what is their home worth? Where are all their investments? What are the values of those investments? Might be nice to know, like, how they're invested as well. Is everything sitting in cash, or is it super aggressive? Like, that gets into some of the retirement, or sorry, the investment management types of conversations, which maybe is too soon to do now, but might be good to just spot check, like, okay, how are they invested? And is that appropriate for their risk tolerance right now? Because maybe it's been a while since they've taken a look at it.
And also, it's a great way to see like if they have like a financial planner to kind of do a gut check there, because it is unfortunate that the aging population tends to be a really ripe group for financial abuse by other people. They tend to be, unsuspecting more often. So it's a good gut check to see, are they working with a fiduciary? And if not, what changes should you make or help them make?
We also want to understand their liabilities. So, their existing debts, like their mortgage, do they have any medical bills? Do they have credit card debt or personal loans? That would be important. Review insurance policies, like what does their health insurance look like? We'll talk about Medicaid, Medicare here in a moment. Do they have long-term care insurance? That's kind of a smaller, it used to be a bigger part of the insurance conversation, but it has gotten less and less common because long-term care insurance, what it provided was basically it was a check to pay for a long-term care situation for 2 or 4 years, or you could build the policy a couple different ways. But if your parents or you in particular had to be in a facility taken care of, paid for everything that happened there. Long-term care insurance policies, though, have gotten more and more expensive over time because the cost of care had gotten more and more expensive.
And such a big group, too. I mean, boomers being the largest group, care is expensive, and there's a lot of people that need coverage.
Yep. And I think a lot of carriers pulled out of the insurance industry there because it was so expensive. There wasn't like a return for them. Like there, it wasn't a profitable insurance product anymore, which a company does need profit to be able to run appropriately. That's important to know if they have something, or if they don't, is that maybe something to start considering looking into? Do they have life insurance policies? Term insurance policies will expire at some point, so it might be good to know, like, when is that expiration date? Or if they have whole life policies or universal life policies, those they could have for a longer period of time for their entire life potentially, but it would be good to know how is that policy built? How long do they have to pay for that policy? And what would be the death benefit? Do they have the appropriate beneficiaries set up on that? And then locate key legal documents like the will and trust, if they have any trust details, power of attorney, which we'd want a financial power of attorney and a medical power of attorney. I think we did an episode. Oh, no, we didn't do an episode on this. That was our After Dark one, Sim. We
We'll
might have to
have to
bring
release
that.
that one at some point. That's pending.
Yeah. Pending. We have an episode where we talk about kind of a dramatic case that really highlights the power of a power of attorney for financial and medical decisions. But see if, we could gather that information, healthcare directive and a living will. That would be good information to have, and maybe have copies of all of this information. That's what my mom and I have done. She's got her legal documents in place, and I generally know a list of her assets and her liabilities, and I've got copies of that information just here at my house. So if there was ever something I needed to do or to look into or help her with, I've got that information handy. But that would be step two. Gather all this important financial and legal documentation.
Brings us nicely to step three, which is to assess healthcare and long-term care needs. So maybe that can be a conversation about like your family history. Like, is there a history of Alzheimer's? And if God forbid that were to happen to mom or dad, what kind of healthcare would they want? Would they want to be in a facility? Would they want assisted living? Would they want someone to come into the home? Obviously, those all come at different price points. And then, as far as actually paying for these things, let's talk a little bit about Medicare versus Medicaid, because those are two different things. Medicare is basically the federal health insurance program for folks age 65 and older. So, Medicare, right? Turn 65, that's your, shall I call it, universal health care. Don't cancel me for saying that. And actually, some people, that's a very small carve out, but also some younger folks who have disabilities can also get Medicare, but it's a very like specific group. There's different parts to Medicare. You probably heard of some of them. Part A and Part B, very common. Part A covers hospital stays. Part B is for like physician or different medical services. Part D is for prescription drugs, D for drugs. We kind of have this thing, we call it like the donut hole. So there's some coverage you get and some coverage you don't get. And that's where you get some of these other like Medicare Advantage plans. There's like part C and part, like the whole alphabet. There's all these other parts, right? But basic is A, B, and D. And then there's Medicaid, which is a both state and federal program. So there's federal funding that goes to the different states, right, for Medicaid. This is health coverage, health insurance coverage for low-income individuals. And that can include your aging parents, right? That can include a wide variety of people, seniors, children, some folks with disability. And it can sometimes cover things and services that Medicare doesn't, like long-term care. But there's kind of an asterisk next to the Medicaid because you're probably thinking, well, if there's more coverage, why wouldn't I just want my parents to do that? So usually it's not going to be for maybe like an as nice facility as you may want for mom and dad, right? Because it's federal funds. They're not incentivized to cover all these things. It's going to be like bare bones. And then when they say it's for low income, I mean, they don't want you to have any assets. I think last I heard it was like $2,000, like very minimal assets. What some people try to do, because they think that they're smarter than the people who came up with this program, is they try to transfer some of their assets to like their children or other family members. There is a look back period. It's like a approximately 5 year look back period in most states. They will see, oh, they had this account and they transferred it to their son. So they do have assets. They're not going to qualify for Medicaid. So we'll kind of keep it high level there. We might do a whole episode just on Medicare and Medicaid, but just kind of know those are the main differences between the programs. So know that those exist. We talked a little bit about long-term care already. It's a weird situation with long-term care insurance because since it is so expensive, someone who may really, really benefit from having it probably can't afford the premiums, right? And then someone who has a lot of assets can probably self-insure, and so they wouldn't need it either. So you kind of have this like middle group. How do we define that middle group? I don't know that we have like a clear definition. I'll throw one out there. Maybe we can say someone who has between $1 to $2 million in assets by age 65 might be a group that could benefit from it. Don't quote me on that. This is just maybe a rule of thumb, but if you have more or less than that, you might not need it. So yeah, that's step three. Assess health care and long-term care needs. Talk to mom and dad about their preferences and what kind of care they might need.
Yeah, and long-term care insurance also is asset protection for distribution later, for inheritances later. That might be important to your family members if they really want to preserve a certain amount for their kids to pass down to their kids or to their grandchildren. Long-term care insurance could be a way to prevent them from having to use so much of their own assets in those times, like drawing down those assets naturally by having to pay for those expenses out of pocket. So that might be another reason to look into it, but I think that rule of thumb might be something to at least start with and go from there. And you could shop long-term care insurance. It doesn't cost you anything to shop for coverage. We do recommend working with a broker who could shop multiple different companies, multiple different policies. They could talk you through how to build a policy. There's always going to be like the Cadillac of coverages, which is going to be the most expensive, but also the most robust. And there's going to be the more bare bones side of things where it's just necessity, but it's also very inexpensive. I think there's a happy balance depending on what you value, what you think is important to have in your policy. So that's something that you could shop around for. And I kind of think the sweet spot age-wise to be looking into this is between age like 45 and 60. That's probably when premium-wise, we may be slowing down on the need for life insurance, like in those later years, depending on what your assets are and what your liabilities are, there may become a time where life insurance is less and less important when it comes to covering debts like mortgages, because mortgage balances are paying down or getting paid down. Debts are getting paid down over time. Kids are out of the house. They're all independent now. There's no need for like the dependent part of life insurance proceeds. So we may be reducing our cost on insurance when it comes to potentially life insurance. And then the closer we get to retirement, we're reducing maybe the need for disability insurance as well, because we're getting closer and closer to just going out and being retired and living off of our assets at that time. But that's when long-term care insurance might become a bigger need. So maybe there is some room in the budget for long-term care insurance. in that kind of sweet spot area. And I say those ages between like 45 to 60 because you're younger, you're not needing long-term care right now, right? Because that's too late. Getting long-term care insurance when you need it, you're already too late. So it's a proactive thing that you have to do. And so the younger you are, the cheaper the insurance is going to be. So that's something to keep in mind too. And then this is also something you could purchase for your parents. If you are concerned about the overall costs of long-term care needs for your parents, let's say cash flow wise, it's not something that you could afford, like paying for a facility on a month-to-month basis for your parents to stay in. They don't have the assets to support it. Maybe they're not at a position where they're Medicaid eligible. So they're kind of in that middle ground there that this insurance is important and could be beneficial, but they can't cash flow it. This might be something that you purchase for parents or that your family collectively comes together and purchases. So just a couple different ways to think about long-term care insurance. It is a pretty robust topic. We could again do a whole other episode on long-term care with maybe bringing a specialist on to talk about it, but these are some things to think about and maybe some of the pros and cons to the policy itself.
I'll add one more thing and then we can move on to the next part of the checklist. But when we were talking about that look back period, right? Someone has assets they're trying to move. There actually are legitimate ways to do that where you can move assets around or do asset planning so as to not jeopardize like means tested federal benefits like Medicaid. So I always recommend working with an estate planning attorney. They know the rules of your state and they can recommend ways to do that that are legitimate and not sketchy.
Not sketchy. That's,
We like that around here.
yeah. So, last thing on this, like just assess healthcare and long-term care needs. For perspective, you could also do some market research on just looking into home healthcare expenses in your area. It is going to be very area dependent on the costs here, just like a lot of things. So, you'd want to get a feel for, like, in your area where you live, what are the costs for maybe home healthcare, assisted living, a nursing home? And maybe also look at where your parents are located, if they plan on staying in their area or if y'all are in different states. That could be some good market research to get some ideas of expenses because we're talking about costs, but you may not have perspective on what those costs might look like and how much or maybe how little it is compared to what you were thinking already. So that could be a good step.
All right, well, let's take it with a fourth item on our checklist, which is to plan for housing and living arrangements. So, do your parents want to stay where they are? Do they maybe want to downsize, which is what a lot of people end up doing, not just to save some money, but also just less maintenance, less things that they have to take care of. Maybe they move into one of those nice HOA communities where they actually like do stuff and you'll just pay $50 a month. Ask me how I know.
My grandmother, my dad's mom, real story. She lives on property that her husband, my grandfather, moved into in the 80s. And my dad, he was older, but he didn't grow up there necessarily, but like he lived there for a bit. And then I grew up there as a kid. But she owns lots of land. And so she has always mowed the land on her property. She has 15 acres. Not all of that is grass that she's mowing or pasture that she's mowing, but probably about half of it is. And as long as I've been alive, she has been who mows the grass. Not to say that my grandfather wouldn't do it. My grandfather did have diabetes, so he had a lot of medical issues. Probably wasn't the healthiest, would have been harder for him to do it. But I think my grandmother just kind of enjoyed the alone time, honestly. Because if
She
you've
probably has
ever,
a
like,
heck of a tan too, because in the summer, that's a lot of grass to mow.
Yeah, and she had a riding lawnmower, so it wasn't like one of the push ones at all. Like that would have been crazy. We all would have rallied to get her a lawn driving one. But she has one of those zero turn ones. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like
Yeah,
ones that
those
you
are
like
nice. That's fancy.
and they're
Fancy grandma.
fast. They are fast, man. So it's kind of funny 'cause she still to this day mows her grass. She is looking at downsizing. That is part of her next steps that the family is talking about. But still to this day, she uses that zero turn to mow her grass. And she goes out there with one of those gaiters on, like to cover her head. She's got like a yard hat. She's got glasses on and it covers her mouth. So she looks like a baddie when she goes out there, like, but fun
More
story there.
power to grandma. So, for those of you who your parents don't want to do that, maybe they will consider downsizing or an HOA where they do that for you, assisted living communities, retirement communities, right, where you can maintain some independence. If they want to stay in place, are there any home modifications needed so that they can stay there? Another option could be, I know I was talking about the Golden Girls earlier, but multi-generational living is a thing. Do they want to live with other people? Do they want to have roommates? This is another way where they can maintain a sense of community and maybe have someone help them pay the mortgage if they have a mortgage, like bring someone into the home.
A lot of homes, interestingly, like have in-law suites these days. Newer builds and even ones that they were building in like the 2000s or like 90s have in-suites. Have you seen those?
Oh my gosh, I talk to my kids, my boys, they're 20 months old now, and I'm always like, which one of you is going to build me an in-law suite? Who am I going to live with when I'm old?
Right.
My retirement plan, see who loves me more.
They better ask you your expectations in the future, but it sounds like you're telling them, so at least they're aware.
If I tell them enough, then that's the plan. So raise them upright. But yeah, just get a sense of what your parents are looking for. And it is possible for some of you that your parents may think or want to live with you. And if you want that, then great. And if you don't want that, then now's a good time to let them know that that ain't happening with as much empathy as you can muster.
Absolutely. And I think that brings us to step five, which is creating a financial plan. Our favorite thing to do, right, Sam?
Make a plan, do it in pencil.
Yeah, do it in pencil because things change, life changes. But you could start this process with a financial planner. So, a lot of listeners I know are financial planning clients of ours. Welcome. Thanks for listening. So, chat with your planner about this, starting to build or integrate this into the plan as you collect and gather more information from parents. You could also deploy the help of other specialists like estate planning attorneys, like you were talking about, family law attorneys, potentially depending on the legal documents you need to get in place and everything. Talk to a CPA if we need to talk about tax ramifications of like selling property or transferring property, maybe an insurance agent if we're looking at these different types of insurances we were talking about, and explore ways to maximize income for your parents. And this is what ultimately your parents should be doing too with their financial planning. They need to be looking at their retirement distribution strategy. And that would be really maximizing the income sources that they have through their Social Security, any annuities they have or potentially could purchase, distribution of their investable assets. Like, how are they going to make it through their retirement years without earning any income? And then also consider downsizing. Like, if they want to see scenarios on downsizing versus not downsizing, having a mortgage in retirement, not having a mortgage in retirement, like, these are different things that a financial planner or a professional can start to stress test with you, which can be really helpful because you might think one way is a good option, but maybe financially, a different way to think about it is a better option.
Yeah, and I might want to actually just call out a couple of those. One you mentioned is maybe like transferring a house. That's one that I hear a lot. Because I work with some retiring folks who wants to pass along their house to their kids while they're still alive. And I think in most cases that's actually a mistake because you guys, I'm going to talk about the step up in basis, kind of getting ready for a second. So a lot of these folks bought their houses in the 80s, a long time ago. Not that that was that long ago, but they bought their house and they got it for like maybe really cheap. And so the house has been appreciating, and they have a ton of equity in there. So what happens is at death, let's say that they pass along their house to you, you get what's called a step up in basis. So there's something called cost basis, which is like what your parents paid for it, and then there's what the house is worth. It's fair market value. So if they pass this house to you, your basis is the fair market value. So let's put some real numbers to that. Let's say mom and dad bought their house in 1980 and they bought it for like $60,000, and now that house they bought in California is maybe worth a million. So if you get that house while they're alive and you sell it, you're going to have a massive gain. Massive gain. If you wait, or if they wait until they pass and then you get the home, your cost basis is going to be that $1 million. So there's no gain. Maybe there'll be a little fluctuation by then, but there's going to be no gain to realize. And so that is a really efficient way to pass along a house to someone if they're willing to wait. And I know that some people don't want to wait because they want to see their loved ones enjoy, the property while they're alive, and that's valid too. But that's just something to know about. If you think you're going to be on the receiving end of that and you don't know about the step up in basis, talk to your parents and get a planner involved too, just to kind of help get some of the emotion out of it. Another topic we hear a lot about with our retiring population is reverse mortgages. Very controversial. The idea is that it is a way for someone to create some cash flow. So if there's equity in the home, you're basically like drawing down on that equity. You're getting like a check every month. And then when your parent passes, the bank or the lending entity is basically going to take the house. And if the house is important to your family, then you guys need to pay off that mortgage, essentially. So not the best idea if you want to keep the home in the family. You know, there's a lot of schools of thought to think about with the reverse mortgage, but just know that's how it works, essentially. It's a way to create cash flow, but it's not necessarily the best for everybody.
Yeah, it's an option. And yeah, very controversial. I don't think there should be the words like never and always in financial planning because it's really hard to say that reverse mortgages are never the right thing to consider because I just don't think that's true. I think there are certain circumstances we could argue that it makes sense.
Reminds me of Star Wars. Only Siths deal in absolutes.
Right. So I think just talking with somebody about the pros and cons and making sure expectations of the family members involved, like they're aligned and they understand those pros and cons and everybody's on the same page, essentially. I think the last bullet point here is discuss how siblings or family members can share the financial or caregiving responsibilities. This can sometimes get touchy, talking to family members, talking to siblings even about like responsibility here when it comes to caring for an older parent. And there may be different values here that you have, different financial situations that folks involved have, where one might be able to contribute a whole lot more versus someone who's not able to contribute as much because of their own personal financial obligations. So, starting the conversation here could be helpful.
It can be definitely very awkward. It's gonna be like, all right, bro, all right, sis, who's gonna wash mom's butt? Like, who's gonna do that part of the caregiving, right? Because it's not just the financial piece. You know, there's gonna be the one sibling who's like, can I just like send a check and not think about this? But then there's like the emotional toll of like, well, I'm in person and I have to like deal with this.
Yeah. So I think just open and honest conversations about this. Not necessarily everyone's on the same page. Sometimes it's hard to be on the same page with these types of topics, but at least like the opinions and the viewpoints of the people involved are known. So you can make decisions and protections like accordingly. I think that's what's important here because the worst time to be having these conversations is when a parent or a family member is already in the midst of these needs, like needing to go into assisted living or needing to take advantage of some kind of like long-term care situation. And that's a really stressful time to be having these conversations for the first time because you again may have assumptions on how you thought your parents or your family members' care was going to go, and your siblings or other family members had a very different opinion or thought process on how that was going to work. So getting this out there in the open earlier can be better.
So let's talk about number 6 of 7 on our checklist. Understand tax implications and benefits. This isn't a super huge credit, but you've probably heard of the child and dependent care credit. And we usually focus on the first part of that, which is child, but it's also the dependent care credit. So in some situations, your elderly parent can be considered a dependent. And so in that situation, if they meet the IRS, requirements, you can get a $500 credit. Not a whole lot to write home about, but it's still something. So know that that exists. And medical records, keep a copy of your medical receipts, I should say, for your parents. You are allowed to deduct medical expenses if you itemize. And this is, again, for your parents, assuming your parents have, a lot of medical expenses, they can itemize on Schedule A if their medical expenses exceed 7.5% of your AGI. That isn't probably, I would say, an easier threshold to cross when you are older because you're probably going to have less income. A lot of retired folks do have less income, but not necessarily. Some people have really, fat 401ks and big RMDs. So not always the situation, but take a look at that and see if that's going to be beneficial to itemize instead of taking the standard deduction. Seniors do also get a somewhat increased standard deduction as well for being over age 65 and or if they are also blind. But again, run the numbers either way, and then you'll just kind of your parent will take the deduction that gives them the best result.
Perfect. And you talked a little bit about other tax implications and things like when it comes to wealth transfer. So I think that kind of goes in this section as well to an extent. But yeah, not a ton of like tax benefits for these things.
Yeah, this isn't a benefit. This is the estate tax, which doesn't actually apply to that many folks. So maybe not worth like going, super into detail, but basically if your estate, which is like the value of like all of your assets and liabilities, they'll take a look at all of that. If it exceeds a certain threshold, which changes every year and it can drop, but if it's more than that amount, which is usually in the millions, then you pay estate tax, which is around 40%. So people hate the estate tax, which means that while people are alive, they should do some planning to think about what to do with their assets, how to strategically move assets so they can get it into the hands of the people they want, their grandchildren, et cetera, without having to pay estate tax.
Yeah, estate tax or estate planning when it comes to financial planning is a very interesting like can of worms we can get into.
So estate planning is integrated, or the estate tax is integrated with gift tax. So we were just talking about how, like, while you're alive, be strategic and transferring assets, you don't have to pay estate tax, right? Well, the IRS knows about that too. So you can't transfer too much, or they're going to get you. And what do I mean by that? So there's something called the gift tax exclusion. You can transfer up to like 18,000, or gift, I should say. You can gift up to like $18,000 in assets. Usually it's cash, but it can be other types of assets without even having to think about gift tax. If you transfer more than that amount, then the IRS wants you to report it on a gift tax return, which is Form 709. I always get that confused with Form 706, but 709, feeling fine. 706 is the estate tax return because you're 6 feet under. Just remember that. Form 709. So it integrates. So if you give away more than 18,000, you have to report it on the gift tax return. It doesn't mean you're paying tax now, but it means that when you die, they're going to see everything on the gift tax return, and that is going to be taken off of your estate tax exclusion.
Yep, anything above that. And actually, for 2025, it's 19,000 this year. So it did go up 1,000. It was 18,000 last year. So folks who or filing taxes right now, it was 18,000 for 2024's return. And then there's a lot of rules when it comes to like transferring or gifting money. It's per person. So if you and your spouse are gifted money from your parents, it could be 19,000 times two. If your parents are both alive, mom and dad can both gift you 19,000 per person. It's per person and it's per donor. And then there's some rules with 529s as well, where you can kind of front load the gift here if you're putting money into a 529 account, which is a child's education savings fund. There's a 5-year rule where you could kind of front load a lot of the contributions in 1 year, but it's kind of maxed out for 5 years going into the future. But it gives mo gets money into that account faster, so it could grow faster, which is pretty cool.
529s are a really great tool for estate planning. It's not just for college funding because the assets in the 529 are not considered part of your estate. So if you want to, like, be the cool grandparent who like left a ton of assets for your grandkids, the 529 can be an option. There's balance maximums per state, but it's pretty high. It's usually anywhere from like 3 to 500,000.
Yeah, it depends on the state. And it could be transferred between family members. There is specific family members it can be transferred to and family members it cannot be transferred to, but it's a more flexible bucket than maybe it might sound like initially. So number seven, step seven, last step on our little checklist here to help you feel organized with helping your aging parents is to make a contingency plan. So this would be identifying backup plans for unexpected financial or medical emergencies. And this is, I think, helpful because it helps you know how to pivot in different situations. These are things that, again, you can kind of stress test with an advisor or a CPA or a financial professional or an attorney. You want to ensure that key family members know where all these important documents are stored. So my sister and my brother know that I have copies of a lot of my mom's legal documents. My sister has a few copies of them as well, and my brother knows that. So the three of us, we are all aware that I've got copies of documents at my house. My mom has original copies at her house. Having those conversations, making sure people are aware, is important. Regularly reviewing and updating the plans as circumstances change, I think, is very important. And that's also helpful if you're working with a professional over time, because these are things that are going to be reviewed and asked about on an ongoing basis if you have a relationship with the financial planner and a CPA and folks going forward. And I like what you said earlier, Sim. It was write the plan in pencil, not pen, right?
Yep, that's all we can do.
Yeah. Because life changes, you might need to adjust some things, and that's okay. That is planning on an ongoing basis, is making adjustments, making pivots when we need to.
I would add to that, like, keep an eye out for any like unusual or big changes. Like, if your parents have like one set of beneficiaries, and the next time you look at the documents, it's like their gardener is the beneficiary of everything. I would be really sus about them. Like, why is that guy the beneficiary of everything? Like, that could be a flag for financial elder abuse or them being exploited somehow. So take a look at that. Any unusual withdrawals from their accounts, if you have access to that, or they making big withdrawals, just like a lot of consistent small ones going to like a place you haven't heard of, like that could be a sign that they're getting scammed. So educating your parents about that, because a lot of parents are, they're our parents. They want to act like they know everything. They raised us, but they don't know everything, and they don't know necessarily about all the scams. We're not going to know stuff, and our kids are going to school us. This is just the circle of life. But make sure that They're not being taken advantage of. And I want to add to the important documents. You know what we sometimes overlook now because we're in this like new high-tech generation, but password managers like LastPass.
Oh my gosh, great. I'm so glad you brought this up. That's so smart because you need a password to get into literally everything these days. And yeah, that's really smart to have like maybe a password book or LastPass with somebody having like the master password in case you need to get into those accounts in the future. I hope this to-do list or this checklist to kind of begin the stages of financial planning for your aging parents is helpful to you. It gives you some insights or gives you at least a place to start because I think that's where a lot of times folks feel kind of frozen as they just don't know where to start. So these could be some things to have in your back pocket for conversations in the future, conversations with siblings or family members. And chat with a professional if you need some additional insights, if you need other resources. I think you do what you do every day and you're a professional at it. And there's folks out there that specialize in this kind of stuff that can make your life a lot easier and make sure that you're crossing like your T's, dotting your I's on how this stuff is supposed to work out. But thanks, Sim, for hanging out with me today and chatting about this.
Fun as always. And yeah, this is a topic that's just going to get more and more important.
Yes. And Sim didn't mention earlier, but she's been away because she also is a host of her own podcast, The Financially Free Physicians.
Come check us out, you guys. We air every other Thursday, right? Am I lying about that? Every other Thursday. It is not just for physicians, but that is our target audience. But you know, we can have like dentists or maybe other high-income professionals. But check us out, Financially Free Physicians. And if you would like to be a guest on our show, please reach out to me. I love interviewing different types of folks.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And I hope everyone has a really lovely weekend coming up, and we will catch you on the next one.
What if you could get fiduciary financial planning specific to your profession that's student loan aware that could change your life for a price much better than you ever dreamed possible? If that sounds good to you, go to slpwealth.com/pod for a free, no obligation 15-minute intro call with one of our own fiduciary financial planners to see if we could be a good fit for you. This podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered individualized investment advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, do not consider it a recommendation to buy or sell the investment. Seek first advice from a financial professional before implementing any strategies discussed. All investments involve risk, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Yay, compliance.